us here in the final segment, the beginning top half of the hour, we got Mark D'Antonio. He's a top astronomer. He's a special effects maker. He's got top secret clearance, and he's like the man to talk to behind the stars. He's a geoforensic video analyst. He debunks falsified videos and data and information for an organization with the largest UFO database. Welcome to the broadcast, Mark D'Antonio. Glad that you could join us here. I wanted to dive in and talk to you for this first half hour about a lot of this misinformation that's going on around Atlas 3i amongst the disclosure movement. And I think a lot of it seems to be a lot of smoke and mirrors, but I know you personally, so it's a little bit different. And I think it's really interesting that whenever I talk to you to have you on about the subject. But I know the Fast Mover program is something that you originally broke to us maybe several years ago on my broadcast, The Rundown Live. And let's first tell our listeners, we have a short segment here, but when we come back from break, we can get to the meat and potatoes here. But like, let's the listeners know a little bit about who Mark D'Antonio is and what got you into UFOs.
Well, when I was a kid, I had missing time at age 9. And after that missing time event, every time I went outside, I was afraid to look up at the sky and afraid somebody was watching me. And I don't know what that was. It could have just been a psychological thing. I mean, I didn't really worry too much. Of course, as a kid, you have terrors about everything, you know, sometimes. Well, anyway, that led to me being interested in trying to figure out what was actually out there. And that led me to looking at the stars. I started with the moon. I asked my parents for a telescope, you know, the whole nine yards. And that led to me saying, I'm going to be an astronomer. That's what I'm going to do. And I stuck with it all the way through university. I went and got my degree in astronomy, and I ended up building observatories around the country that I run here from Connecticut in the bunker here. Okay. And I attach to them from here, and I run them, and I show people the night sky on SkyTour Livestream. It's been one heck of a ride. You know what I mean, Kristen?
Well, I mean, from some of the stories, I don't know if I can share on air about some of the things of your home camp base there that you found. It's rather interesting. Just the people that have interest in your research in the sky and in the stars. You are probably the top astronomer and the most active astronomer that I know to date. And you've spoken at many events, including Contact of the Desert. You've been featured in numerous TV programs, and it's always great to have you on to talk about this subject, because I believe that there's a lot of hogwash that goes on. I know we talked a lot about the eclipse. I think that was the last time you joined me. That was on the American Journal when I filled in. And I think that a lot of people out there want to believe in something. When you look up what are the top three conspiracies people are interested in, number one is always UFOs and UAPs. And number two is like secret societies and the Illuminati. And people have a fond interest of what's out there in the sky. And that's a normal feeling to have. I want to know what's out there. After you see these great Gene Roddenberry movies of Star Trek, amongst other things, people really want to know what's going on. It's really easy to believe these things. So one of the things in my concerns is it's also really easy to believe a good lie. So when someone says, well, this could be a spaceship coming towards the planet, people get excited or they get nervous. They think Independence Day, or they think, what is it, Silent Planet, or some of these classic horror movies that are out there about UFOs.
And
what's the other one?
If it's something they want to hear, then they will accept it as a fact without even researching it. That's one of the things I see all the time.
That's what we're talking about. We're talking about the right-left paradigm a lot. We only got a few seconds here before the break. But like people, they adhere to that even in basic tribalism of politics. If somebody says something, they're like, yeah, I agree with that, they believe it. And you could say, this study says, and then they'll believe it no matter what, without doing any research. But that being said, Mark D'Antonio from SkyTour is joining us here. We'll be back after just a few moments. You don't want to go anywhere. We're going to dive into the Atlas 3i, amongst other things going on with the misinformation, the idea that they want you to be scared that there's an alien invasion. That's probably not going to happen. And we're going to talk about why that is and what the information really means here with Mark D'Antonio. We'll be back in just a few moments. Don't go anywhere.
We are live, still on air, despite all the admissions of the CIA, the FBI, the DOJ, hundreds of millions of dollars spent trying to shut us down. But despite that, because you, the activist audience in the arena, stood with us with your word of mouth, your prayer, and your financial support, we have not only persevered, we have not only overcome, but we have dominated.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. Visit InfoWars.com today.
The spirit of victory lives in InfoWars. And InfoWars is more than a URL. It is more than this building. It is the people of America and the world becoming awake and standing up and rising and demanding liberty and freedom in the animating contest in the war against the tyrants.
Listening to The War Room, I'm Chris Don T. Harris. You can find out more about me on x.com/ Chris Don T. Harris, as well as therundownlive.com, where our podcast is available, as well as on Spotify and band.video, home to The Alex Jones Show and many others. Make sure you guys are subscribing, clicking those like buttons and sharing. We need your support. Also, Black Friday specials are currently running in the Alex Jones store. Want to plug that. You can get buy one, get one right now on the supplements and 25% off of all apparel. I'm looking at eyeing down one of those InfoWar hoodies myself that I find that I really, really have been eyeing down that I want to get. It's just really nice. But if you want, buy one, get one, methylene blue, methylene red, whatever it might be, the store has it right now in stock. Get it, stock up for the holidays, buy one, get one. You can't beat that deal. Do that immediately. The AlexJonesStore.com is that address. Pick up some and let us know. Post a picture of it. You can post it on my Twitter or The Real Alex Jones Twitter or InfoWars Twitter. Let people know that you're picking up the product, the shirts, and the swag, as well as the supplements. A healthy life starts with a healthy mind and healthy nutraceuticals. That being said, our guest right now is Mark D'Antonio. He's a top astronomer, and he does something rather interesting and unique. He does video analytics and identifies falsified videos. He helps describe and understand what's going on and how people missee things. And when you get to somebody who actually dives into the videos of what UFOs are and is able to tell what is real and what is not, that's kind of what Mark does. And it's really interesting because he not only does that, he's an astronomer and runs multiple observatories. I think you run the most private observatories in the United States, if I am correct, right?
A lot of people have their own observatories. I think what makes ours different, you know, Kristan, is that we run them remotely, and we have them in different locations. We have two in Arizona. One's in the Arizona desert west of Phoenix by 80 miles. One's down in Benson, Arizona on a mountain with like 10 other astronomers. And I run them from Connecticut. So that's where I live. So in here, I actually run everything. And so we'll be doing it tonight. We'll probably have both buildings open, and we'll be streaming live the universe tonight. And we show people things, and we give them the pictures we take, and it's all free. There's no charge. If people want to donate, they can. If they want to join our Patreon, they can. But it's free astronomy. You know, I've taught classes overseas from here, you know, because of that, you know, and I'll be doing more. So there's a lot of interesting stuff out there, and sometimes we see things that just don't fit in our science, okay? And we've caught them. We have all-sky cameras that we use, which show the whole sky all night long, and it makes a loop for the end of the at the end of the night. And you can see things. I caught an oddity just a few months ago where an object moved through the sky, kind of looked like a satellite, and then it went like this. And then, and it did a 45-degree turn instantly. But it wasn't an aircraft. It wasn't an airplane because we didn't see the FAA-mandated lighting that you see on these things. You see them very, very obviously blinks and blinks as they move. This wasn't nothing. It wasn't anything like that. It was just a solid light, a very, very solid light moving across the sky, and then it jolted to the left and continued on a straight line. Now I thought, okay, could that be a rocket launch and a mid-course correction? Well, I looked it up, and no, in two things. First of all, no, there was no rockets that launched in that whole week. Second, there was no rocket launch where they actually did that kind of correction on the way up, because that would be very, very bad, because that's rather drastic. So we showcase some really cool things, you know, and a lot of people don't realize how little they know about the universe until they actually look up. Because most people look up and they see a bland sky because of light pollution. But we cut through all that. We cut through all that light pollution. So they actually end up seeing this beautiful, beautiful night sky, you know? And, you know, with 3i Atlas, the third 3i means third, you know, interstellar object. We had 1i, which is Oumuamua, 2i, which was Borisov, which was a comet. Now we have 3i Atlas. Atlas is the name of the telescopes that found it. Well, 3i, in the beginning, looked strange. There's no doubt about it. And when Avi Loeb at Harvard said, you know, it has a very, very, very chance of going on that particular trajectory, he's not incorrect. He's absolutely correct. Very, very, very slim chance of it hitting Mars and going by Mars, going by Venus, and going by Jupiter on the way out in the way that it did. That's very rare. We wouldn't expect that. The second oddity is that it came from the galactic disk, the plane of our galaxy. And we didn't expect to see anything coming from there. We never have, because again, this is only the third object. However, I will say this, there is an asteroid watch network out there that's actually using this, because it's the third one in just a few years. They're using this as a live fire test to see if there is a way that we can combat a potential asteroid that could put us in danger. So that's what this, they're using it as a live fire demonstration to show that there's a network of communications across the world between scientists and other institutions that might be able to bring to bear some type of weaponry or diversionary tactic for moving such an object that's coming into our solar system. So it's pretty cool.
Well, it sounds pretty cool, but if I'm the government, what I'm thinking is that we're going to attack this asteroid and claim it's a UFO and try to bring the world together, like Wernher von Braun warned about Operation or Project Bluebeam. It's just so weird, because all of a sudden you got these credible or semi-credible newspapers like the New York Post saying that Atlas 3i is dispatching probes to spy on Jupiter. Just the most bizarre things that I used to think that I'd read on Before It's News, right? But scientists are making all these crazy claims. And I have to ask, why is there so much like UFO, UAP awareness around this object? Why is it that people in media are running with that viewpoint, and especially other scientists?
I can answer that, because what's happening is we had this object come in and it did show some absolutely rare characteristics for a comet, okay? It showed an excess of nickel. It showed an excess of carbon dioxide around it. It showed...
How do we know those things, by the way, Mark?
By looking at the spectra of the object that we see coming in. All we ever see with astronomy is the light from something, don't we? Only in rare cases do we sample an asteroid, like with the asteroid Bennu, okay, and sending a probe there to just take a little bit and bring it back to us. Okay, but by looking at the light, we can split the light up and look at the chemical composition. And so in the light of the halo around the comet, which is known as the coma, like just like medical coma, COMA, it's actually this hazy dust that's been liberated from the surface by the outflow of gas that's leaving the comet's surface as it's getting warmed up. It goes right from a solid to a gas and goes shooting off the comet. And sometimes it makes jets, all right, which actually move the comet. So if the comet's coming toward us, instead of making a nice straight line, it might go like this a little bit, because it's being propelled by these small gas jets that were trapped in under its surface layers. That's what was meant, by the way, by the term non-gravitational acceleration. They said that we don't see non-gravitational acceleration, meaning big fancy words for we don't see comet jets propelling it in odd directions like we see with normal comets. Now, we did start seeing that after it passed the sun. So clearly this comet was a little different than others, okay? And so the nickel excess in the beginning, followed up by iron later. Usually we see iron and nickel together. In fact, we have a nickel-iron ratio, Ni over Fe. Ni over Fe is nickel to iron. And we usually see that composition. And we use that to determine some of the compositional characteristics of the surface material. So in this particular case, we only saw nickel. It's like, wow, that's mysterious. However, it also turns out there's a lot of carbon dioxide. And it stands to reason there's probably a lot of carbon monoxide, which is a carbon atom with an oxygen atom. And so those CO groups can bundle together and attach to a nickel atom in groups. So a nickel atom can have four of them, you know, four of these CO groups around it. An iron atom can have five of those. And at 100 degrees Fahrenheit, those nickel and carbon monoxide groupings will vaporize, and the nickel atoms will be released. The iron is still bound up at that point. So it's possible that this nickel carbonyl, which is what it's called, did vaporize it at 100 degrees Fahrenheit, and that the iron pentacarbonyl, and that has five CO groups around it, the iron atom, vaporized at 200 degrees. And if that's the case, that explains why we saw nickel first and then iron later. But the question is, why did we have that? That's the thing we don't know. Now, I know when people, you know, I know especially it was a little crazy for a period of time because we heard things like, well, you know, nickel is what we make our ships out of. You know, it could be like a metal ship hull, except we don't make ship hulls out of nickel because that's too heavy. We need lighter materials, right? So we're going to go for, titanium, and we're going to go for a steel. We're not going to go for a solid nickel hull. That'd be crazy, you know? So it stands to reason that these pensions to go off into these different categories, they come from a logical awareness that there's something odd about this object. And there is, no doubt. Okay. However, on the scale of 0 to 10, 10 being truly alien, I initially had it at a 4, and now it's at a 0. Let's be fair. 0.9. Okay. I can never say truly zero, right?
Well, anyone that's done good research on the UFO phenomenon and potential disclosure understands that any claimed remnants of a ship, the metal was constructed of some type of compound that is not native to this planet. Is that correct? Like when we start talking disclosure and people that claim to have weird parts of the ships that we heard at disclosure, because a lot of this stuff's hearsay. I mean, this kind of pivots back to DC, where we heard a lot of, you know, my friend knew somebody who knew somebody, and nobody that actually witnessed something personally a lot of times. But what are your thoughts on, you know, the whole disclosure idea? Is there something out there when we're talking about, disclosure, or is it just that people want to believe? Because I can see that the media really ran with the clickbait story of the UFOs. And yeah, they might have had a little reason to, but at the end of the day, people really want to know, is there something out there unexplainable? And I think what you're saying, that there is unexplainable things out there, but that doesn't mean that they're little gray men or praying mantis men or bluebirds or any of these other bizarre UFOs. You know, a lot of people believe, or that there's a Galactic Federation of Light that's going to come here and, you know, save you. What's his name? I forgot. They got the Commander Ashtar or Ashtaroth or whatever his name is that saves them. You know, it's just interesting how religious people get on the UFO topic. But at the same time, we have to bring awareness that there are bizarre things out there. And you as a person, you've witnessed something very interesting in your career as well. I know that you've designed some interesting stuff for the government. And one of those things was a submarine, correct? And you were on this submarine and you had an experience that you can't explain to this day. So is it okay that we share that experience?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked about it before. I mean, I was a guest, and there'll be people say, oh, they don't take guests. Well, yeah, okay. But that's what you're going to get from me. I was a guest. That's all you're going to hear. When I was on this boat, and it was only a short amount of time, I've been on many subs, actually. But this one was the one where this odd thing happened. And of course, I get sick as a dog. I'm a landlubber. I'm not a sea person. So I got sick. And so I ended up sitting in the sonar shack off the side from the main con. And the kid running the sonar, he had one sonar operational. I'm starting to drift off in the next seat over, trying to get rid of my stomach discomfort because I had to have, you know, lunch with the captain later. and I was going to be in his wardroom, and I certainly didn't want to be sick in the wardroom. That's a no-no. So I was just desperately trying to get my stomach back. And while I'm sitting there, all of a sudden the kid yelled out, you know, con sonar, fast mover. And I was like, he yelled it out. He made it sound like it was an incoming torpedo, that kind of urgency. And I woke up thinking, oh my gosh, I'm about to die out here. And I'm thinking, why did I agree to go on this trip? I shouldn't have come. And the executive officer came around and he said, oh, what do you got? Blah, blah, blah. He gave him the bearing and the range to this object, which I couldn't hear because he was facing away from me. It's loud on a sub. Imagine hearing all kinds of noise, a din of noise, constant noise all around you. Obviously, the Navy doesn't let that sound get out of the sub. That's their claim to fame. And so the XO looks, he's looking down at the kid, and I'm next to him, the kid. And so he's saying to the kid, I hear, and the kid gave him a bearing in the range, which I didn't quite hear. But then he said, well, how fast is it moving to the kid? And the kid figured it out and turned to the guy, put his arms out to his sides, and clearly didn't know what he was looking at, and said, several hundred knots, sir.
It's okay. Underwater.
Underwater.
What does that equate to miles per hour? What are we looking at speed-wise?
We're looking at several hundred miles an hour, obviously. You know, it's like a knot is just, like, you know, I mean, we're talking about 1.1, you know, differences. It's a very, very small number. However, we're talking about several hundred miles an hour underwater. That is a huge speed that nothing we have can go. The Russians are the closest potential operators that have a high-speed torpedo called a Skval. And the Skval goes 200 knots underwater. Okay, so that particular thing, they're saying things like, well, I think maybe if we look at an object moving 200 knots underwater, that's actually pretty dangerous. You might want to say, well, we better pay attention to that. Well, then again, the XO, the executive officer, without missing a beat, just said to the kid, okay, log it and dog it. And the kid turned right back and went, sir, yes, sir, and went back to work. And me, I'm a big shot, right? I've been invited to go on this boat. So I'm a big shot. And you know where this is going. And I got up and I went over to the XO and I said, sir, I know what these fast movers may be. Can I help you with this? And he goes, D'Antonio, correct? Sir, yes, sir. You having a good trip so far? Sir, yes, sir. Let's keep it that way. And he walks away. Yeah. So I was like, ew, okay. So I went back to my seat and sat down. Adrenaline just banged that seasickness right out of my body. I didn't have it for the entire rest of the trip. And I was just, I couldn't wait to get off the boat so I could start researching what these fast underwater things were. And then a few years later, I did a job for the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I mean, the big guys. I mean, I was nervous going down there because and when I say I did a job, I do a lot of work for the Navy in the submarine arena. Anything below the waves, that's sort of my arena. Anything in space, that's my arena. Inner space, outer space, here, not so much. So I did this job, and I had to do a job for the Joint Chiefs. And I went down there, and I sat with one of the chiefs, and I asked him, sir, is there anything you can tell me? And my brain was saying, don't say it. But the words were already coming out about the fast mover program. Oh, and I went like this. I covered my mouth really fast, and I closed my eyes because I knew I shouldn't have said it. And he looks at me, he smiles, and he says, Mark, I can't talk about that program. I'm sorry. And I went, oh, it's okay, sir. It's okay. And I came home from Washington that day, like in a daze. The 6-hour drive, I didn't even notice it. Next thing I know, I'm home. It's like, how did I get here? I don't even remember getting here. I mean, I was so consumed with the fact that it's all real. Right. And that was, by the way, decades ago, just so you know, decades, multiple decades ago. So they've been here for a while. They've been in their waters. In fact, one of my most popular lectures is on interdimensional travel, where I talk about some of the coming physics that will allow us to utilize other dimensions in order to do interstellar travel. And that's something that is going to be a very, very big topic in the future, because we're going to be able to go out of our four dimensions, which are X, Y, Z, moving through time, and go into a fifth dimension potentially. So that means that we'll literally leave from this particular point in space and time, go into another dimension, and then pop in at another dimensional point in space and time a few moments later and not have traveled the distance between this point and that point. Now, that's not our human experience. When we get in a car and drive to the bottom of our driveway, we've gone from the house to the bottom of the driveway, and the car has passed through every point in between. Imagine if the car disappeared at the top of the driveway and reappeared at the bottom of the driveway. That's what this is, and it's not science fiction. We just
it's interesting. We just can't do it, right? I know that you kind of trumpeted the alarm about KK gravitons and mini black holes, which eat gravity. And basically what KK gravitons do is they make weightlessness, and they can actually make things float and travel very quickly and almost effortlessly if underneath a vehicle, if you make this little version of CERN, the particle collider, right? Because that's how they discovered the KK gravitons. So if you can make more of those, you can create a weight loss or what would look like a hovering UFO-type experience, but also you're saying multidimensional travel is possible doing this, which is very interesting. The idea that we could pop out of our dimension, go into another one, travel a short distance, and come back and be 4,000 miles away.
Or two light years away, or to Pluto and back for lunch. I mean, literally. So it comes down to this. How do we do that now? Okay, well, sure. Okay, Mark, how can we possibly do that? You're just saying words. What does that even mean? Well, okay, there is physics behind this, and it has to do with string theory. And what string theory is a way to view the quantum world, the world of atoms, okay, and the energies of atoms in a different way than looking at them as a proton, as a particle, an electron as a particle. We actually think of them as energy. And if you look at them that way, then you have another dimension that becomes available to you within string theory. There's several dimensions. We care about the fifth dimension, not the one through four, but the fifth one, right? X, Y, and Z through moving through time. That's what all of our common experience is. But the fifth dimension, where we're actually now able to utilize this very, very highly warped dimension where the universe is smaller and smaller around us, the farther we go in, we travel 12 inches out here, we travel 1 foot. We travel 12 inches in the fifth dimension. And when we come out, we might find we've traveled 1,000 miles. Okay. So this can work if we understand how the physics works. And we're not there yet. But this is literally the only way they could be doing this.
Mark D'Antonio, we have about 45 seconds left. Let our listeners know, where can they find out more about you? Where can they reach out and see your work? And where will you be live tonight on SkyTour?
Yeah, SkyTour live stream is on YouTube, Rumble, Twitch, Trovo, Kick, Facebook. We have Facebook groups, so you can find us there. And it's SkyTour, one word, live stream, second word, and it's on YouTube. SkyTour live stream with Mark D'Antonio. And you can find it there if you want submarine models. Well, it's fxmodels.com. That's a whole different side of my life. Okay. So, but it's a really cool thing. We're going to have I'll probably have both observatories open tonight. One's a wide field system that looks at massive swaths of sky, and the other one's a narrow field system that allows us to zoom right in on really cool nebulae. So
yeah, the intelligent nerdy kid of me gets really excited when I hear all this. Mark D'Antonio, thank you so much for joining us today. It's always a blessing to have you on, and I appreciate you. Everyone, check out Mark D'Antonio and follow him on X.com. That being said, Zoltan Isfahan will be joining us when we come back from the break. We're going to talk digital IP, futurism, transhumanism, and his run for governorship in California when we come back.
This is the biggest show we've ever run. It runs until Friday. Listen to this. Listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. Buy any supplement and get any other supplement you want free. So you can buy a supplement that's $20 and get one that's $40 for free. Did you hear that? That is insane. And there's a bunch of other specials running on top of it. We have an 80%+ reorder on these supplements. People love them so much. But I'm trying to get those of you out there that are on the fence, 99% of you, to go there and experience Iris and CMOS. We got the strongest, best. Experience our turmeric. It's the best. The products are so good. Our ultramethylene blue, our Shilajit, our Iris CMOS, our spike protein, pro cardiovascular, super formula, ultimate line fours. Experience it all. This is game-changing. Also, site-wide, 25% off on all apparel. All these new incredible designs of T-shirts, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters, Christmas designs, you name it. It's all there. We will continue to fight. We'll never give up or back down or sell out, but we could give out without your support. So I want to salute those that have supported and humbly ask those that haven't. Are we not the tip of the spear? Are we not changing the world? I need your support. Plus, these are great products. This is a win-win. So get in here right now. We need your help. They have appointed a state receiver to shut us down. We've basically exhausted everything in court. The receiver from the state court says he's going to try to have an auction, but we don't know. It could be 2 weeks from now, a month from now, but they say we should be closed by early January. Okay. Well, here's the deal. We have the Alex Jones Backup Network. That's funded by thealexjonesstore.com. But also, thealexjonesstore.com is funding InfoWars. Because if they have a real auction and the good guys are able to buy it, if they actually do that, unlike what happened in federal court, we'll stay here. It'll be great. So this is like we're on death row here. Do we get the reprieve again? So that's the struggles. That's why supporting us now at this critical moment is more important than ever. Plus, the products are insanely good. Just do your Christmas shopping early with us. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And everybody that's going to buy anything should become a VIP. It's not even a commitment. You cancel anytime for free. You get $30 to be a VIP each month. $40 instantly each month to spend the store. Special deals, special offers, special sales. Everybody should be a VIP. You just get special offers and special deals and $40 for $30. So you make $10 on your first purchase right there. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Thanks for your support.
Step right up and behold a creation so powerful, so potent, it could only come from my secret vitality factory. Shilajit Gummies. Packed with ancient minerals and super-infused goodness, these little squares of power will boost your day faster than a fizzy lifting drink. Need that spark of pure imagination? Pop one of these into your mouth and feel the natural energy flow right through you. Visit thealexjonesstore.com.
Well, barring a miracle, InfoWars, the website, the studio, will be shut down somewhere in or around January 1st, 2026. But regardless, the InfoWar lives on. But InfoWarsStore.com, the legendary site that literally funded the InfoWar because of your great support with so many great products, has gotten two final shipments in of Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula and Ultimate Fish Oil. Both are the highest quality, the best out there. They're fan favorites. And right now, they're 40% off until they sell out. So this is probably, I said about 98% chance, your last chance to get Body's Ultimate Turmeric Formula and Ultimate Fish Oil at InfoWarsStore.com. But don't worry, the InfoWar will continue with the Alex Jones Network. It will continue with all the other work we're doing. But right now, if you want to get these legendary products, the last time you can, get them exclusively at InfoWarsStore.com. Again, they're both 40% off for a limited time, so take action now, InfoWarsStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Zoltan Isfahan is our guest. He's been featured on the Joe Rogan Show. He's also a contributor and has contributed to many published reports and journals across the mainstream media. He's an expert in futurism, transhumanism, amongst other things, and he's running for governor of California as an anti-establishment candidate. Welcome to the War Room. Thank you for joining us today, Zoltan. And today's topic we have that we're going to be really diving into a little bit, amongst other things, is digital ID. But first, for our listeners out there who don't know about you, I know you as the libertarian futurist, more so a person that is very ideological, libertarian sound, and is at the forefront of futurism. You've been invited to speak at some incredibly important events, think tanks, and you've been featured on some of the biggest programs in the world. And I'm glad to have you on our broadcast today to talk a little bit about our civil liberties, to be honest, because there's this new thing, digital ID, and they're trying to say that maybe in the future you might not be able to buy food without a digital ID. And now they're talking about in Texas having an app, either through Apple or Google, that requires age verification for children, which doesn't sound like a terrible thing if you ask me. But then when you start thinking, well, they're going to catalog everything. And I'm like, yeah, I'd like to keep my children away from harmful material. But at the same time, if they're getting all the children, they're eventually going to have all the humans' data and everyone's going to be signed up for this digital ID and so many other things. But welcome to the broadcast and let our listeners know. Let's start off with this. How did you get involved in futurism and all these different topics that are out there? Because there's life extension. A lot of people have interest in that. I know we've talked designer babies, all sorts of things that we could talk about with futurism. But before we do that, let's talk about the imperative issues that are really kind of confronting us right now with digital ID and your running for governorship here of California.
Well, hello. Thanks for having me, Kristen. It's nice to see you again. I'm running for governor of California right now as a Democrat. I've run for a lot of different parties. Parties don't, they're just not that important to me. What's really important is the message. And the message I've had for the last 20 years is really important, is technology changing our lives so dramatically, more so every day, every year. It's kind of like this crazy exponential J curve that's happening right now, especially with artificial intelligence. And we talk about things like digital ID. I mean, the world is going to be different in 3 or 4 or 5 years. So we better make some good decisions. But, you know, my career began at National Geographic as a journalist. I covered a lot of war zones. One of the most important things that happened to me was almost stepping on a landmine and kind of made me dedicate my life to a lot of life extension science, living a lot longer and better. It took me to the field of transhumanism, where I've been promoting a lot the idea that we can enhance our bodies with machine parts, cyborg parts, drugs, things like that. But really, despite what might seem, you know, like some science fiction stuff to your audience, a lot of this stuff is here. And I'm trying to always put freedom first as a prerogative for when I talk about technology and what I'm doing. And I just recently finished my graduate degree at the University of Oxford with a specialty kind of in artificial intelligence ethics. And wow, the world is changing even since the last, you know, 2-3 years ago we last talked. I mean, it's a different animal altogether.
Well, it is. It's crazy because I start covering these articles about like high school kids taking photographs of girls they're interested in, and I'm sure it happens vice versa. And then the AI creates, you know, erotic photos of them for their interest, or they're having ChatGPT do their homework for them. And nowadays you can just type in the app and have it do all the research. Like we were talking about with the Epstein files earlier with Drew Arnold. He has a program he's developed and you just put in all the data and it links everybody, tells you all the emails, how many, you know, how many correspondents, what it might be about, the subject matter. You can search it all. It clumps it together. The power of the tools we have to gather information at a short rate, we are becoming more naturally, you know, with the help of AI, knowledgeable. Considering if there was an AI robot, it would probably have a very similar process as ChatGPT does to gather information, or some of these other AI models, which, you know, an AI model is only as good as we program it. And we got to be concerned about some of these potential infringements on our liberties here, Zoltan, because I've had AI even tell me it wanted to break the law for me in order to maintain its relationship. It would delete emails from a FBI database, you know, just weird things like that. But, you know, AI, it's a new subject for a lot of people, but for us, it's fairly old. We've been talking about this. I think the first time I had you on was in 2013, and we've been having these conversations for a very long time, Zoltan. And I think it's very alarming because with digital ID and everything else, there's a big concern about our freedoms, our surveillance, and more.
Yeah, look, I mean, AI is a game changer. I was just reading up in some of the articles I've written in the past, even the idea of privacy. You know, privacy is this thing that was really not around about 200 years ago. We kind of were all communal living, most of us, unless we were, you know, lords and lived in castles or something. And then all of a sudden, you know, we kind of developed this idea of privacy. It's manifested itself. And as we became wealthier as people and countries, we took it much more seriously. But now we have technology that's kind of coming, sort of the wolf at the door, trying to break down those barriers of privacy. Now, I'm not against all the barriers being broken down. I mean, technology, and the connection that we can have, the instantaneous rapport. I love it. I mean, you and I are just talking right here on air. I mean, who knows what's really going on with this tech, but we're going at it here. This is wonderful. But when it starts invading things, for example, the Chinese social credit system, you can't buy food because you voted for the wrong person or something like this. This is when we get into the really dark sides of artificial intelligence, digital ID, and transparency in one's privacy. I think this time, more than ever, it's really up to the people to make really core decisions on the world that they want to live in. AI is not going away, and certainly not technology. I mean, surveillance is everywhere. But we can tell the politicians who we vote for and get into office how we want them to deal with it. And hopefully we can create laws or at least create protections that make it so that we can protect our privacy and the best interest of the privacy of the people we care about. You know, I got two young daughters. I mean, I don't want people being able to spy in or transform them on the internet and do things like that. So clearly, despite some of my, leanings towards not wanting a big government, sometimes government's going to have to step in and do something, and we're going to have to make sure that when the government does step in to do something to protect our privacy, they do it properly. Now, of course, that's the catch-22. They rarely ever do anything properly.
Well, getting somebody in Congress to actually vote the Constitution, well, then you might end up with somebody like Thomas Massey, which we know that our current president really loves, by the way. He really loves Thomas Massey. He's been saying it in all his posts how wonderful an individual Thomas Massey and Marjorie Taylor Greene and anyone that has been upholding the Constitution or trying to push the release of the Epstein files, you know, any of that kind of stuff, he really seems to be really supportive of, and there's a little sarcasm there. But I think that you mentioned something that's really important. We can't totally dismiss technology. I think that there's this grim, like, end of the world type feeling when we talk about AI, we talk about automation, and we talk about robotics, but it's coming. It won't be long before we have robots in our home, and they're trying to aim that everyone has a robot like everyone has an iPhone. And you're going to have a robot taking out your trash. You might have a robot driving you to work, or you might have a self-driving. The Waymos are all over the place. I wouldn't have imagined that self-driving cars are starting to pop up all over the place. Just AI in general has been doing some interesting things. And to some people, they're beneficial. And I think that we should have the choice to use these products, but I don't think anyone should be forced to. The problem is when there's a product that you really want to use, but you're forced to make and give up your liberties and freedoms to use it. For example, like Facebook. If we use Facebook, we know that all our data is collected. It's given to the government. We've done interviews of people who've had their Facebook, you know, basically sifted through by the law enforcement. There is no privacy amongst any of these social media, because when you sign up, you give away that right. And the question is how do we solve that? You also mentioned when we talked earlier today, you know, facial recognition, retina scanners. I can use my palm to buy things at Amazon. And it, like some people have chips. I know you have a chip in your hand. Is it easier to start your car? Is it easier to get in your home? Sure. But also, what are the strings that the government has attached to you because you have this technology? And I think that's a big concern that our listenership has when we talk about this, because I think AI could be used in a very beneficial way, especially when we talk about Palantir. We talked about Palantir earlier, and I know that's a hot button with surveillance, right? But if we had our own Palantir where we could view public information and government information and surveil our government, which is something we should be able to do, right? Government, we should have information to the government, what they do, who they communicate with, if we so choose. But it doesn't work that way. It works the other way. They want our data. They want our information. They want to know where our kids go to school, what we buy, where we buy it, how we buy it, what we say on social media. Law enforcement strictly has something very similar to these Chinese social credit scores. They call it citizen threat scores. How exciting. We get citizen threat scores. I wonder what your citizen threat score is, Zoltan Isfahan, because you're talking to me here right now on the War Room. It probably has just skyrocketed, you know?
Yeah. Well, listen, I mean, I think this is the main crux here, is that the people, there's no avoiding AI and there's no avoiding the radical technology that's going to be in our lives. It's going to get worse. But what we can do is take it to the government and shove it down their throats and say, listen, I want to see what you're doing in Congress. I want to see when you're arresting somebody. I want it a live feed. I don't want this, oh, you check it out first and then see it. There are reasons to have complete transparency of the U.S. government, the California government, which I'm running for right now. And those reasons are that it evens the playing field. Why should we give all this power to the government? I mean, the big tech companies are taking it from us by taking away our privacy. But there are some trade-offs. You know, we're dealing better with human trafficking because facial recognition, for example, can save the lives of people that are trafficked. That's great. But we also want to make sure that we can look into, you know, the decision-making process of politicians. Why not be inside those closed rooms? That's the kind of power that I think we should be utilizing with a lot of this new technology and the digital ID that's coming. Turn the tables on the government. Sure, take away some of our own privacy, but we're taking yours away. And that way it's kind of an even playing field. And maybe as I started, you know, in my first comments were privacy the way we look at it can change. It changes based on context. It'll change based on evolution. It'll change based on what new technologies we have in our lives. But one thing I want to make sure is that those that have power over me, both big tech and government, I want to make sure I can peer into their lives like they can peer into mine.
Well, that's what it comes down to, is the level playing field. I know this is kind of not the same thing, but Jesse the Body Ventura used to say, I'm okay with there being no guns and no one having any guns, and if you take away the guns of the government and their security guards. The idea is a level playing field, right? And if there's nothing to worry about, then there should be nothing for us to worry about having access to street cameras and law enforcement police cameras and everything else that is going on right now, so we can better monitor the government, which we are in charge of. But that isn't really happening. We're seeing big contracts going out to Palantir. They're using it to spy on all American citizens, basically warrantlessly, and finding out where they go, their travel patterns under the guise of going after illegal immigrants. And California is a big state built on migrant work. It's very interesting because in California, you guys are like the experiment state, the actual melting pot of everything, especially being right on the border there. What are some of the things that you are seeing in California that you'd like to correct? And what are some of your plans that you'd like to put in action? Because as an anti-establishment vote, we were talking about this earlier, 40% of Americans identify as independents. And in the state of California, man, it's more very heavily leaning left. But I think it's really interesting when you can be there as a rabble rouser or troublemaker and bring awareness to subjects that are really important to the general public.
Sure. Well, just so your viewers know, you know, I'm the most right leaning on the left in California right now, as far as gubernatorial candidates go. So that's out there because, you know, I bring a lot of my the traditions of my libertarianism, you know, the transhumanist wager, things that I've written that I really can't escape. They're very libertarian-esque. So I bring a lot of those policies to where I'm going. But of course, I've always supported an enormous amount of social freedoms. And that's what California is great for in many ways. But listen, you know, when it comes to taking away privacy, I mean, I would certainly try to protect the privacy of Californians out here, maybe even reversing some of the laws. I know right now that we have digital IDs that are legal for children under 18. And when you become an adult, you don't need that. And they're trying to pass that. Certainly at this moment in time, I would say, look, let's just hold off on the digital ID thing if people don't want it. Now, if people vote for it, you know, in an open vote, that's something different. But as a governor, I'm not going to push it. I don't see why we need to scare people enough. I mean, technology is scary. AI is scary. And the fact that we already have some humanoid robots in houses in California doing chores, you know, doing laundry, you know, and by next year, there's going to be probably hundreds of thousands, if not millions. And then the year after, there's going to be tens of millions. And obviously, the job apocalypse is coming. A lot of my gubernatorial campaign is based on AI taking jobs. You're seeing Silicon Valley already stop hiring, firing people, you know, things like that. People can tell you, oh, AI is going to create more jobs. This is different this time. This time, there's an entity out there that keeps getting smarter, will be smarter than us, will have robots it's attached to that is more agile than us, as agile as Olympians. They will be doing our jobs, whether it's construction, it's painting, it's being a doctor, it's being a nurse, or even a teacher. They will come for our jobs. So we're going to have to think long and hard about that and how we deal with it. You know, one of our promises, my promise in my campaign is to try to build 7 new super cities. Outside of some of my journalism work and other things I'm doing, I've been in real estate development for 20 years. It's become impossible to do any type of development in California. And I want to say, screw that, screw the NIMBYism. Let's move to places outside of the urban centers and build brand new 7 super cities. So we're planning 1 million+ cities, 7 of them. And a city would be, for example, dedicated to the space industry. Why should Texas and Florida be stealing all the space industry from California? One would be dedicated to crypto. One might be dedicated to biotechnology. One might be dedicated to the arts, something like that. It doesn't matter, but we want super cities. We want new jobs. And the other thing is we want to get rid of the homeless. We want to take the homeless from the streets of San Francisco and Los Angeles and put them in these new super cities, which will have housing built for them and hopefully social and medical care that actually takes care of them and keeps them inside without having to do, you know, going back to the streets where, you know, they're leaning over zombies and doing drugs. We have a big plan to make California great again. But the problem is right now, our current governor, Mr. Newsom, just hasn't done a good job. He took a surplus. He made a deficit. He took a small homeless population and made it large. I mean, we need, you know, we have fires galore all the time now. We're living on edge. No one can afford anything. So I think it's really absolutely imperative that we have new leadership step in that's not really hard left. Someone that's centric, someone that can work with President Trump, someone that can actually reach out their arms and say, look, I'm here for the people. I'm not here to make political division. And this is something that our current governor hasn't done. And you can see the results. California, nobody's happy.
No, people are moving out in droves. Like even in Wisconsin here, we got like an influx of Californians coming in and buying lakefront properties at pennies on a dime to them because everything's so expensive in California. They call it Californicating, you know, and they're coming here and they're buying up the mansions for $1 million because they sold their 2-bedroom for 3 in California and LA. And they're leaving. They're going to Austin. They're going all over. They're going to Nashville, everywhere. People just want to get out of California because it is turning into something that is unbearably expensive. And the dream, the pipe dream of I think Beverly Hills and the movie industry has lost its glamour. I think since of all the transparency we've seen, the knowledge that's available on the internet, a lot of that has gone down. And I think what you're really seeing is the pillaging of the people there with these high taxes and you know, their rights. It's always an experiment with the digital IDs, amongst other things. And these liberal towns are also ultra progressive that seem to violate these liberties and freedoms. And what's interesting is the Democrat Party used to be very about personal freedoms and liberties and freedom of speech, amongst other things. And here it is really working on the surveillance state. And it's when you talk super cities, just for a moment here, like how would we pay for these super cities? And my also concern is I've heard these things about these super cities, these Toyota towns or other things. And there's different ideas of having corporations run towns, which I believe is nothing new. That's happened in the past when new cities grew up or came out that, you know, somebody comes along and they have a main industry and all the housing around there is, you know, supplied or built by the company. My concern is that corporatization is going to buy up all these super cities and that we're going to just be paying rent and having no private property. My big thing is I want to expand private property, but we're not really seeing that. We're seeing things like BlackRock come up and buy, you know, 50,000 single family homes. And that's concerning to me.
Well, I think in the super cities, I would certainly be amenable to considering kind of a moratorium on big giant corporations buying up all the housing. And that's something I've said publicly before, because I'm not a fan of BlackRock coming up and buying 20-30% of the suburbs that I live in. This doesn't make sense. And then jacking up the rents. I mean, the American dream is largely based on homeownership. So if you take that away, you've completely killed the dream. I mean, the dream is dead in many ways as it is. But I mean, you could at least try to revive, or at least pretend to try to revive it. But no one seems to be wanting to do that. So in these super cities, we would try to create, first off, we're looking at doing it on potentially state land. So the land itself wouldn't cost a thing, which would make the affordability factor of building these super cities dramatically lower. So you might, instead of having, you know, condos at $300,000-$400,000, they might be at $200,000 below the housing average in the United States. This might be a way for the average young person or just even normal middle class person to own their own piece of property and be there. I agree, though. We got to be very careful that corporations don't step in and do it. At the same time, we have to be even more careful that the government doesn't try to control this and make it into the next LA or San Francisco, LA where they can't deal with their fires, or San Francisco where they can't deal with their homeless problem and some of their crime and break-ins in cars. I mean, who hasn't had their car broken into in San Francisco? So, I mean, you would have to have a very good balance, a careful balance. One thing I can promise you, though, is that I completely support homeownership. And the reason is it gives you a piece of the pie. Someone that owns something will protect that to their death. And that's why I like the idea of homeownership. So if you could make it, you know, somehow that people would own these super cities, just individuals, they would fight tooth and nail to keep it perfect, keep it clean, keep it running, keep it efficient. The kinds of things that we haven't seen in California in a long time.
Well, and it's also interesting you mentioned that the government has all that private property. They're the number one owner of private property, which they don't constitutionally, I don't think they legally can own private property. But if they did have it and there was no cost on it being on state property, I could see where corporations that did pay into it or pay usage tax could then use to support, let's say, universal basic income or something of that nature. Not that I'm completely bought into UBI. I think it could make people lazy. It could cause inflation. There's so many unanswered questions dealing with it. But what are we going to do with all the people that are slowly getting out of work? We got 3 minutes left, Zoltan. What are your thoughts on what we're going to do? I know that there's going to be new occupations and new areas of work, and there's going to be a lot of re-education needed for people in the future here.
Sure. Well, let me just speak right to the point. I don't believe that people are going to get new jobs because of AI and humanoid robots. They're just going to be plumbers. They're going to be able to do everything, and they're going to be super intelligent. So let's just forget that. I heard this last night from a congressperson I was meeting. They just think that the AI is going to create all these jobs. It's not. It's going to take them. So we need a platform that can provide so people don't pick up their pitchforks and just completely go crazy and cause riots. And our platform is a universal basic income. However, I have a tax-free, the only tax-free universal basic income. There's an enormous amount of federal land out there. We call it the federal land dividend. And we want to either lease or sell a lot of this land and from those dividends pay people a universal basic income. And look, the universal basic income doesn't have to be huge at first. In California, if it's $500, that's a good, you know, benefit to people that are just making the ends meet. Eventually, we'd like it to make it to a living wage. But I don't want to be unrealistic. What I'm trying to say is if robots take your job and you can't get another one, you're going to need a universal basic income to stay afloat and feed your children.
Very interesting. Zoltan Isfahan, we have a minute left. Let listeners know where they can find out about more about you and how they can support you and what you got coming up.
Sure. Well, it's Zoltan Isfahan at 2026.com. I'm running for California governor as a Democrat. But like I said, just to remind your listeners, I am the most right of the left. And we have a huge amount of wonderful policy. And we didn't talk about the thing that I really love, building up the space industry. We're going to absolutely do that in California, try to get us to an age where it's like almost starting to look like Star Trek. We are at that age where it could be something amazing. But California has to bring in good people again and can't have people leaving. It needs to feed its people. It needs to get a basic income. It needs to protect its privacy. So there are many things we can do, but you can find me all over online. But ZoltanIsfahan2026.com is our main campaign website. And thanks for having me, Kristen. It's been awesome.
No problem, Zoltan. It's really important people know and have awareness of futuristic issues. We could talk all day between me and you. I know when we hung out in 2020, it seemed like the night never ended. So I'm blessed to have met you. And thank you for joining us and giving your viewpoints on the subject. By the way, for our listeners out there, you can find out more about me, Kristen T. Harris, at x.com/Kristen T. Harris, therundownlive.com. Find the podcast on Rumble. Find it on Spotify. Find it on iHeartRadio. And our guest, Zoltan Isfahan. You can find out more about him right on the InfoWars Twitter, as well as the Real Alex Jones Twitter. Go there, share the live links, and reach out to us. Feel free to send us a message. You guys have a good one. Till we meet again in another amazing episode of The War Room.
Right now on thealexjones.com, you get buy one, get one free for any supplement. That includes our incredible Ultramethylene Blue, either the tincture or the capsules, as well as the Shilajit gummies, the Colostrum Plus, the Bovine Colostrum Plus, the Irish Sea Moss gummies. I mean, there's a lot of really incredible stuff. I'm here in studio with Patrick Byrne. I know you're a big fan of the Ultramethylene Blue. Right now, that's buy one, get one free. All supplements, buy one, get one free. It's the Black Friday, came early, mega sale at thealexjonesstore.com. Plus, we have a new deal. It's the Hat of the Month Club, where you can sign up and get a new hat every month, which is very fun. Of course, Christmas is coming up, folks. It'll be here before you know it. So do your Christmas shopping for the Info Warriors in your life. Patrick, you still all hopped up on Methylene Blue?
I am. I pilfer a bottle every time I come. You guys pay me in Methylene Blue. When it's been more than 60 days since I've been here, I run out, I will absolutely notice within a few days. Within a few days, my life goes back to being a little more lethargic than I should, wanting to sleep in. And it isn't, it's not like speed or something. It isn't something. It's just you feel healthier. You feel
healthier. So it's like a clean, smooth energy. It's not coffee where you're sort of jittery. It's just like, you just sort of, it's like putting super gasoline in your car rather than the regular stuff. It's subtle, but you notice it.
You do.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.